It's
12:01.
We're 1 minute late. I'm gonna mute everybody.
Did you get Lauren's question?
Lauren's right there. It was a one statement question, right?
Yes, there's Lauren. Okay, good.
Current and new parent will be muted. Yes. So let's minimize that. Now I'm gonna unmute Lauren. Do we want to say anything before we just jump into Lauren's deal?
No.
Is there any new people on the, just raise your hand if you've never been on a Zen Talk before.
They're oldies. Oh,
Brittany's raising her hand. Brittany, welcome. She's a newbie. Here's the deal. This is just a conversation, and Lauren's going to start out. She Facebooked us, or she emailed us yesterday. She has a question.
Is that a thing, Facebooked us? I think people do say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't be so critical, sweetie.
There was no criticism. It was a question.
Sounded critical. That's all I'm saying.
No.
So anyways, we have a chat. There should be a chat bar on the right-hand side of your screen so you can type. So I'm going to type real quick. I'm going to say, hello. So that is just like a conversation starter. If you have a question, if you want to ask a question, you can type in or you can raise your hand. Or if you find yourself in the little square, there's three dots and you can raise your hand that way, I think. So anyways.
Or just wave to us.
And Anita says, bonjour.
Bonjour.
All right. So let's just jump in with, so you don't want to talk about the conference or anything?
Sure. It was fun.
Thanks for those who were able to get there. And for those who were not, maybe next year or maybe never.
My friend Manisha just texted me an hour ago. She said, I hope you're still feeling good about the conference. And I said, I am, but it's so funny how quick you just returned to regular life.
Yep.
And how I already have emailed one person about the 2020 conference. Like, things just keep on going. Like, you don't stop. And that's not true. Sunday I stopped. I kind of didn't do anything.
Sweetie, you were shut down.
I was very tired.
Peggy helped with a lot of the breaking boxes down.
I would say Peggy and JC did all of it because I just watched.
You were good at watching them work.
I was watching closely.
Yes.
And intently. And
Millie wants Dax.
I know.
Millie, I don't know about Dax.
Todd's not a huge fan.
I like Dax. I just don't know if he would be that great.
He's not an expert.
He's not an expert on parenting. He's a smart guy and he's funny. He's entertaining.
So here's my thought about that.
And sometimes he rubs me the wrong way.
Just to kind of, I will tell you guys a few things since you're on Team Zen, just, you know, because people, you know, we've gotten some of the surveys back and a few people said Dax and a lot of people say Brene Brown. Brene Brown does not do these kind of things anymore.
She's too cool for school.
I've contacted her 3 years in a row and I contacted her, 3 months ago? Mm-hmm. I said, I'm giving you like a ton of time. And her girl, the woman who works with her, contacted me right away the same night and said, Brene doesn't do events like this. She only does things that are connected to her leadership work. And she'll like go to Facebook or Google or to the military, but she doesn't do like conferences. So they were really quick to be like, you guys are doing great work. We love you, but Brene
doesn't
do
that. Plus, we don't even know if we'd be able to afford her, even if she said yes.
Yeah, the first year I asked her when it was astronomical.
It was a number that
we couldn't afford. Made
me throw up in my mouth.
But I'm not criticizing her for that. She's worth that.
Damn right.
She brings people in. So we maybe would have figured something out, but I don't know what that
you know what
been.
She is, sweetie?
We would have like put our house on. Like,
we were mortgaged.
No, I'm kidding.
Brene is the bomb diggity.
Yeah, she is. And then the Dax thing, I will contact them, but it has to be like structured around Dax and Kristen. They have a new, new Hello Bello, what's it called? Products. And if they can somehow do it around parenting, but for Dax just to come in and do armchair, it doesn't really make sense for the conference, but we'll see. Who the hell knows?
We're certainly open.
We're open-minded to everything. Sure. But sometimes people surprise you. Sometimes someone you'll be like, oh, I don't know that person very well. And then they speak and you're like, oh my God. So, even if we decide on someone that's somewhat new, there's always a reason. Todd and I have reasons that people are.
Sweetie, there's a reason for the season.
Correct. All right. So let's do it.
Where's Lauren? There she is. All right. Lauren, I think you're on. Can you say hello?
Hi, Lauren.
Hey.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So this was good timing for today. So my question is about how to support your partner when they're grieving, and also still feel like you can get your own needs met in some way too. So my husband, sadly, there was a death in his family, and it's been, this is the third funeral that we'll go to, and my son is two, so it'll be, in his lifetime, we've gone to three funerals together, and they're all, like, family members who he's been, my husband has been pretty close with. And the reason I mentioned the number is just because I feel like we're sort of, like, learning how to do this as a family, so, like, we kind of have agreed that, like, we'll leave the kids with my parents for the wake, and just Tim and I will go, and then the funeral, we go as a family, like, he wants the kids there, even though they're really little, which, so my kids are 4 and 2, and I respect that, like, I understand why he wants the kids there, but it makes it hard for me, because, and I don't want to make this about me, but it just, this seems like,
right.
Like a good space to be honest about that. It makes it hard for me because I've also known these family members who have passed away, obviously not as well as my husband, but, you know, we've been together for 10 years. So, like, his grandma, his uncle, this is his aunt's funeral, and, like, I know all of them. And my role during the service and the reception has been, like, to be with the kids in the lobby. So I'm getting better at, like, advocating what is going to work best for that situation. Like, this time around, it is not going to be Aunt Lauren in the lobby with all of the nieces and nephews. Like, I have kind of done some, my brother-in-law's dating a new girl, and she's going to come and help me, and kind of, like, so we've got a little bit of a plan around that. But the reason I bring that up is because it just, it makes it hard because I don't feel like I'm there with my husband at the service, because I'm literally not. Like, I maybe say two words, you know, if anything we're talking about, it's with the kids. So I'm not part of, like, the mourning process or the grieving process. Mm. So that's, like, kind of one piece of it. And I can, like, feel myself getting a little choked up. But the, like, deeper part of it is that, you know, death is just, it's hard for everyone. And so I could go to a funeral and, like, a funeral and, like, not even know the person, and I would still get choked up, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think death is hard for everyone. It's, like, something that's really hard for me. Like, it comes up a lot in my own personal therapy. It's, like, a lot of my darkness is around that. So, like, that's part of it. And then the other part of it is that my husband is usually pretty open with me about things, but he processes grief completely on his own. He puts it in a box. This is, like I said, the third time this has happened, and really the first time that we're having a conversation about it, where last night he said, he kind of got frustrated with me because I kept asking him, like, how he was doing, and, like, he just doesn't want to share with me, you know, he doesn't want to talk about it, and it's hard for me because I'm a therapist, so, like, I sit with people in their sadness all day long. Like, I know, Kathy, you said this before on the show, and I've heard, like, Amy Schumer say it too, that, like, I don't have a tolerance for small talk. Like, I just want to get into it. Like, even when clients come to see me and they want to talk about work for the first 10 minutes, I'm like, oh, fine, we'll talk about work. You know, like, let's just get to it. Like, what is it that's making you sad or that you really want to talk about? And so it's hard that my husband, I feel like it's, not to, like, sound arrogant, but I feel like it's a gift that I have, and I feel like he doesn't want to access that in these moments. Like, there are other times in our relationship that he does, but the interesting thing is that, like, that comes, it seems to happen, like, really out of the blue. It's not so much when my radar's up and I'm asking questions and, like, you know, kind of in his zone about it. It's more just, like, when he wants to bring it up. So, like, he said to me last night, he's like, basically, I want you to, like, do the opposite of your instincts with me. Like, your instincts are to ask me questions and check in with me and whatever. And he's like, I want you to be George from Seinfeld and don't do that. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard for me because it feels like that's, like, denying a part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing I'll say is just that, like, really the hardest part of all this is, like, I can't make any of it about me. You know, it's his family member who passed away. Like, mm-hmm. I don't feel like it's right. And this is, like I said, timing of this today was perfect because I felt like, okay, this is a place I can talk about it. But like with him, like it can't so much be about what my needs are because it's his family member who's passed away and it needs to be about him and like his grief process. So yeah, I guess any suggestions you have about like how to support him, but also like how to help me kind of like just navigate through it would be helpful.
All right.
Okay, Lauren, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
I'm going to mute you, but we might bring you back. So a few things, and because I know Kathy has plenty to share. So first of all, this might be more about him than it is about you because these are his family members, but this is not a black and white yes or no thing. You have every right to experience this grief in the way that you so choose. Now, you do have to make some space for his needs because this is his family, but it doesn't mean a complete disregard of your own. And I don't know if this will make sense, but for our first miscarriage that happened after Cameron and before Skylar, Kathy's like, I just want to be with you, Todd. I don't want to be around the kids. And it sounds like I did a lot of things that Tim is doing, which is
I want my whole family, the
whole family. We're in this together. The whole family's got to be there, blah, blah, blah. And it was an awful decision because Kathy didn't want to be a mom at that moment. She wanted to be a human being, mother grieving. And so we buried ourselves in the basement and the girls were upset. It didn't work out. So,
and can you, from a male perspective, why did you want everybody around? Because that's kind of why is Tim saying I need my whole family there?
I can't say why Tim is doing it. I think the way I understood it was we celebrate as a family and we deal with challenges as a family. Now they were 4 and 2. Like I can laugh at myself now having made that decision. But I don't know how old they were, but it sounds like they're about the same mm-hmm. age as Lauren's kids are. So I'm guessing the reason Tim wants them around is because his kids make him feel good and he wants them.
And the family's there. And he wants the cousins to be together.
Yeah. And it could be that whole thing like, see my kids. This is my, there's going to be a lot of, the cousins. Mm-hmm. So is there space, I wonder, for there to be some sense of compromise between it, because this is a complete disregard for your ability to grieve. And it's yes. not fair that you are the aunt in the back of the funeral parlor or wherever it is, having to babysit your two kids and all these other kids.
While the adults are all getting to talk yeah. and mourn, it's not even.
But so when you have this conversation with Tim, you can do it not from, you were at the conference, so not from a below the line place. From an above the line place with a sense of compassion and empathy. Cause if you come out attacking from below the line, it's going to go sideways. So anyways, that's our few minutes.
So a few things. So Lauren, the first thing is that I'm thinking about grief and I'm thinking about when you're asking Tim how he is. First thing is that, like you said, your gift as a therapist is to ask people how they are and then talk from that place. But you got to remember that Tim is your husband. I know you know that. But what I mean is he doesn't want a therapist and what he feels his role is in your relationship is to be strong and protective and do his work and show up and listen to you and be there for you. And he doesn't want you to be worried about him because that makes him feel more vulnerable than he already is. Now, when I say that, that doesn't mean that you're wrong to ask. I mean, I would do the same thing. I just asked Todd the other day, you know, you seem really melancholy. Tell me what's going on. But the thing about grief is that we don't want to feel better and we don't want anyone to try to make us feel better. And then you add the wife component to it, which is I feel like you want me to feel better so you can feel better. And it becomes this like, constant, he feels when you ask him how he is, even though this isn't your intention, he feels pressure. Mm-hmm. He feels like you are saying to him, be better. Are you okay? How can I make you better? Even though you're saying none of those words, there's a sense of, are you okay? You must be sad. And he doesn't, he probably is, but he doesn't want to, this is what's so crazy. It's a lot easier for us to be vulnerable when we're not feeling vulnerable. Does that make sense? Like,
say that again.
We can share of ourselves once we've gotten through something, but once we're in the middle of it, if he's really feeling the grief and vulnerability, he can share about it in hindsight, but right now he's just in pain and he doesn't want to have deep talks about it. What he needs to know is that you are okay that he's in pain. You can even say to him, Tim, when I'm asking you if you're okay, do you know I don't need you to be okay? Mm-hmm. That you have every right to just be sad?
Like, and if he wants to deal with it in his hyper-masculine way and keeping it all inside, unfortunately, Lauren, you're going to have to let him do that.
And that could be his initial process. Now, you've gone through this three times, so you know the full scope of it. I do not. But I would say a lot of people shut down first. That's a very common, like, it's not easy to just open up about everything really quickly. So I think my point is that what he needs to know is when you are saying, how are you? Do you want to talk about this? Also add on the end, I don't need you to be okay. I'm not asking so you tell me you're fine. I'm asking just because you know that if you have a question or if you want to discuss, I'm here. But dude, be sad. Like, I honor your even wanting to shut down for a while. I just want you to know I don't need you to be anything other than you are. There's a great website, and you probably already know this, Lauren, but for everybody else, it's by Megan Devine, and it's called Refuge in Grief. And she has a lot of good information about how to be with a grieving person, because grief looks different for everybody. Again, it's refugeingrief.com. And the most important thing to remember is that when someone's in pain, they don't want you to talk them out of it, and they don't necessarily want you to talk them through it. They just want you to be okay with them not being okay. Can you just sit next to someone who's in pain without trying to cheer them up, without trying to make them feel better, and let them know they are just as loved in that state than they were when they weren't grieving? And then the second thing is what Todd said. Lauren, I would say to you that if that funeral service is difficult with your kids, even if Tim's in pain, you got to let him know, because I couldn't do that. When my grandmother passed away, I had to get somebody to come. And again, I know it was my grandmother and we're going to compare, but I'm like you, death is death. If it's a family member, and if it's one of my husband's family members, it's still just as hard for me. We're family. It's hard for my kids, and I cannot be on in that way.
Lauren, have you said, even if you're at a funeral and nobody, and you don't know the person, you still get sad. Have you had that conversation with Tim?
No, I really haven't. I just, have tried to respect, that it's his family. And like, you know, so his grandma passed away 2 years ago today, and my son was born 3 weeks before, and my son had surgery when he was 2.5 weeks old. We literally like came home from the hospital from his surgery and like turned right around and went to his grandma's funeral. So like we were just like in survival mode. You know what I mean? Like we didn't have time to talk about any of this. So that's kind of why I mentioned like, this time around I am trying to plan a little better. And like my daughter's 4, like she would actually be fine during the church service. I feel like maybe we could compromise and like Connor could stay home with my parents or something.
Yeah.
I should be more open with him. And usually I am really open with him, but I don't know why, for some reason, I feel like it's his family, like his process, and I don't want to make it about me.
You know, what's interesting though, is he's basically saying to you, don't ask me these questions, treat me normal. And you're like, okay, but then you also believe that you're not supposed to say anything that has anything to do with you. So it's in, he's not causing this, but it's in a way it's keeping you in a box where it's like, I can't help you. I can't talk to you about this. And I also can't deal with my own needs. So everything's getting congested. And you know, you decide what works best the day of the week. Like, I don't know if it's tomorrow or in a week. Like even having your kids there initially and then having your mom come pick them up after 30 minutes, that can be a compromise too, because even having your 4-year-old, you're still going to have to watch her, Lauren. Like she's still going to need to eat. She's still going to need to go to the bathroom. You're still going to be momming. And there is something that I have said to Todd, is in it about his mom, but about other times that we've been grieving, is I just want to be with you. I know you don't need me to take care of you. Just let me love you. Just let me be present for you. And then that's not selfish. That's love, you know? And so you can say, let's have the kids there for a while. I get that. But then I would like to be present for you, even if you don't talk to me the whole wake. Mm-hmm. It's not about it being a party together. It's about, I want to be in tune with you.
Well, and I know Tim, and I would say if he's, you know, one benefit is you can play this for him if you feel comfortable with it. I think, Tim, a compromise is absolutely in order, for, you know, for lack of a better term. And it's not fair to have Lauren play this role. And I know there's two sides to every story, and Tim, you're not getting your ability to share it.
And he may not even think of it that way. It's right. Not that he's trying to be unfair.
But the bottom line right. is if his, you know, and by the way, it's not fair to tell your wife to do everything that goes against her instincts, you know, and I'm
and
coming.
He may not know that yet, but yes.
But that's what he said to her.
But no, she hasn't told him yet.
But she talked about the George Costanza thing. Do everything.
Oh,
opposite.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
So
I think he said that he doesn't really mean that like on a day-to-day basis.
I know. Okay.
Yeah. But I think in this situation he was kind of like trying to have
he's bringing levity to it, maybe.
A little bit of humor. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And he's saying in his roundabout way with George Costanza is please don't worry about me because that makes me feel more vulnerable than I already do. Like that's, you know, like that's what I mean about sometimes we can be vulnerable when we're not feeling vulnerable. Like we can share something deep, but not if we're in the midst of crisis. And if he's grieving and you're worried about him, then he feels like he has to make you feel better about how he's feeling. It's just, it's a show up for him in a way without, you know, feel like I already said.
So just play this for him. If he's up for it, he may not want to hear from Todd and Kathy today through his grief, but if he's up for it, because that's why let me be the bad guy or let us be the bad guys and you support and love while at the same time get your own needs met. So
yeah, it's all the ways you're feeling. Me too. Mm-hmm. I can't do all that. That's too much.
Yeah. And you know, real quick, I'm going to mute Lauren before I go to Dawn, who I think is going to be next. When my mom died, and we've shared this story before, I was the night my mom died, obviously it was a very heavy night and I cried and cried and cried and Kathy just let me cry. Like I didn't want her to touch me. I didn't want. And then she even said, do you want me to leave the room? I said, no, just stay there. Mm-hmm. Now that was my version of how I wanted Kathy to show up. Tim's version might be, you know what? I actually want to be alone right now mm-hmm. and create the space for that. Just make sure that he knows that you love him and that you want to support him and don't go according to your plan in that regard. Just allow him to have his own process.
Right. And then at the same time, make sure that what you need is in place to support yourself and mm-hmm. him. Because when someone's grieving, it's kind of like being a parent, right? I'm not comparing our husbands or Tim to a child, but we have to be able to know our limits so we can support the person. I would just posted a video on Facebook that I showed at my pre-conference workshop. So a lot of you saw it, but empathy isn't empathy without boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, if we're just like giving, empathy is empathy when there's boundaries around it.
Real quick, sweetie, before we go to Dawn and then Millie after Dawn, uh-huh. Anita says, what if the person doesn't know what they need?
That's their process.
That's their deal.
And sometimes they don't. And what we show up as is the person who says, it's okay that you don't know what you need. It's not our job to help them solve it. It's not our job to tell them what to feel. It's not our job to say, do what I do. It's our job to be present for whatever they're experiencing. That, and again, it says, but then I'm not helping them. That does help them. When I'm feeling really sad or when I'm overwhelmed, I don't want Todd to tell me why I'm not really overwhelmed or why he's going to take away all my overwhelm. I want him to say, yeah, overwhelm. I know that feeling. Or yeah, overwhelm, you know, like that's where all of our emotions need to be okay is when someone shows up for you, that they're not showing up for you to make you better. They're showing up for you and saying, you like this. It's fine.
Aaron says, in my experience with grief, it has been beneficial to be good to myself and what I need so that I can be able to be good to my husband.
Perfect,
so,
Aaron. Thank you.
All right. Dawn, you are, hold on. I'm trying to unmute you. Chill.
It says unmute.
I know. It's not, hold on. Just hang tough with me. I keep trying to press the unmute button. There we go. All right.
That was me.
Hi. Hi, Dawn.
Sorry. Hi. I have a curious question, I guess. Mine is that when you know that there's something that you need to do differently, like you see a pattern in yourself that's repeating over and over again, and you're in that state, like you're self-aware of it, but you feel completely powerless to, you know, it's to stop it from happening. I guess I'm just kind of curious, why is that? Like, why? So
the situation I'm in right now is that I've got a lot going on and I need to be taking care of myself. And this is Bethany.
Hi, Bethany. I'm sorry, I was waving to her while you were talking. I just want her to know that we see her. Hi, baby.
And I know
this is Bunny.
Hi, Bunny.
Oh, the Bunny.
And I know that I need to be taking care of myself and like going for runs and eating healthy. And I crave the exact opposite. I want to sit in front of my computer and consume a fire hose of information. And I want to do the opposite. And I was just curious, like, why is that? Like, why don't we want to do what's best for us? And I know that doesn't really help anything, but for me, I do like to understand why. I don't know. Yeah, I'm just frustrated with myself. But
No, that's a great question. I'm going to mute you, and I'm going to give you a very, very different answer than Kathy's about to give to you.
Oh, boy, I'm excited.
I love this. I was actually planning to use this for my men's retreat this weekend, but we can't
squeeze it. None of them will be there.
We can't squeeze it in. But so here's the deal. So what you're saying is, how come I can't change? She wants to go out for a run instead of be on a computer and consume information. So what you're really kind of talking about is, why don't I change? So the reason you don't change is because there's resistance, okay? So I learned this in this book that I love called 15 Commitments to Conscious Leadership, and it has a mathematical formula of why people don't change.
I'm falling asleep.
Okay? So it has three variables. V, which stands for vision.
Okay?
So Dawn, think of the vision that would come to surface if you did these things that you want to do. Go out for a run, so maybe you get more healthy or you have more energy. So I encourage you, and I'll even send a sheet to you, or I'll put it in the notes. So vision. So you need to work on what your vision is. What are you trying to get out of it? So vision multiplied times discomfort. So like, what is the cost of you not changing?
I can't sit in front of the TV.
Right?
Computer.
So the vision multiplied by the discomfort plus first steps.
It sounds like algebra now.
It is. That's why I love it. That's the way my brain works.
Okay.
So vision times discomfort plus first step equals change. So let's say you need 100 in order to make this change to go out and walk instead of sit behind your computer.
Okay.
If your vision is 10 and your discomfort is also 10, 10 times 10 equals 100 plus first steps. So if I say first steps tomorrow morning, Dawn, I'm going to hold you accountable, and I'm going to ask you at the end of the day tomorrow if you went out for a walk. So that's an example of the first steps. So you can be really high on the vision and not so high on the discomfort, or something could be like in a crisis where the discomfort is terribly high. Mm-hmm. Like my wife is hitting me at the kitchen table. Like that's not okay. That's a really high variable. So usually it happens where there's a little bit of both in there. But those are some things you could do. So I would say,
What can you do? What are you saying to do? Like, I
write
the
down
equation.
A vision statement of what you're going to get out of doing this.
Okay.
And then become aware of what the cost is for doing this.
Okay.
These are the two big, so those are multiplied times each other. And the first steps is less important, but you need to have some first steps of how to get to that.
Okay. So it's an equation, but really what you're doing is trying to be clear about
a basic understanding of what it is that you want to cultivate in your life. What it's costing you to not have that, and then what are some first steps to start?
Okay.
I'm going to put it in the show notes, and it'll be much better explained than what I just did for you.
Well, it made sense. I would say I liked the first word that Todd used, which is resistance. You have to remember, there's a really wonderful book called The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. I highly recommend it. And if you don't want to read the whole book, Oprah interviewed him a while ago. It's not a great interview because she talks over him a lot. It was like hard to listen to, but he was also on Marie Forleo's podcast. Anyway, what he talks about is whenever there's a sun, there's always a shadow, no matter what you're doing. He's talking about something we want a lot. When it's a sunny thing we want, and all sun casts a shadow. So there's always going to be resistance to things that we want. And a lot of times we think if there's resistance, that must mean I'm weak. That must mean there's something wrong with me. That must mean I don't want to take care of myself. You have to accept resistance as a normal experience rather than something you need to fight back before you recognize that the sun is still shining. Because when the shadow is cast, it doesn't mean the sun is gone. It just means that it can kind of, you know, what's the word? Like push you away from what you really want. So the first answer, using Todd's word, resistance, is that's normal. Like, the second thing is, what do you really want to do? Like, again, you can use Todd's sheet to do this, but, you know, like for a long time, I used to run, and you may love running, but I used to run, and Todd and I used to do triathlons, and I was like all into it, and I would like get medals around my neck.
But
and
you didn't put your head in the water that one
I
year,
know,
sweetie.
But that's because there was poop in the water. What's the water?
A little bit of poop.
There was
big whoop.
Lake Michigan had like an E. coli. I know, poop. You should go get our bunny so she can see our bunny. Okay. As I'm talking, she's over there. And they said swim at your own risk in the water. I'm like, I'm not putting my head in the water anyway.
I did.
I know Todd did. Todd went in the poop water. Bethany, he went in the poop water. It was gross. So anyway, but I realized that I don't really like to run. I really like yoga. And you don't have to do yoga. I'm not saying do yoga. I'm saying, what do you really want to do rather than what you think you're supposed to do? Wait, we got to show Bethany our bunny. This is a real bunny.
Oh,
right. That's our bunny.
Will you pet her head?
Yes, the bunny. Yeah, she's sweet. Yes. She's our bunny.
She's only got three legs.
Yeah, she's missing a foot. So anyway, like instead of I should run or I should exercise or I should get my, you know, like I have some friends who do Orange Theory. Maybe some of you do Orange Theory. And that's great because I know your heart rate gets up. But that's my nightmare. That is my nightmare. And I know people are like, oh, you'll burn calories. I don't care. I don't want to go to Orange Theory. It would be like, it would make my mornings awful. So the other question for you, Dawn, is like, is there something you want to do? Like take a walk and listen to a podcast and look at trees rather than I should go run. Because taking a walk is a big deal. Like taking a walk is good mentally. It's good physically.
And it burns fat because when you run, it burns sugar.
Exactly. So. And if you walked every day versus ran twice a week or walked three times a week versus ran, you're doing more than you were doing before. So you may be like, yeah, but I'm a runner and I want to burn the calories and the endorphins. Walking creates endorphins too. Or something else. There's being on an elliptical. Or I'm not going to give you that answer. I'm just saying that really figure out what you want, what sounds good. And then if people say that doesn't do anything, baloney, it does something. It helps you mentally. It helps you physically. And then anything else, like I should eat better. What does that mean? Like we all do that to ourselves. I should eat better. You know, last night we had pizza.
It was awesome.
And you know what? Tonight I'll probably have a salad and big salad. I put a lot of stuff in it. It's not like a healthy salad. I just put a lot of good stuff in it. And then I have a smoothie every morning. And then on Friday, I'm probably going to have French fries. And it's not about constantly eating better. It's about being thoughtful. Were you going to say something?
Well, it's about accepting. I think you're much more likely to make a shift if you accept yourself where you are now. I think what happens a lot of the times is we're like, oh, I'm not good enough the way I am, or my body isn't the way it wants to be. If you can love it and accept it first, you're much more likely to make some changes. And that's counterintuitive because somebody's like, no, you need to not like your body so that you go out and do it. I come from the other way, right?
Absolutely. Like you there, and again, it's easier said than done, especially for women. Like yeah. Todd can like lose weight by not, like he'll have 2 days and he'll be like, yeah, you know, now I'm feeling good again. And that's not the case with my body, but it's less about how it looks and more about, I can tell in my body when I haven't eaten well, and then I'll make a different choice the next day. But that doesn't mean I'm done with cake. It doesn't mean I'm done with fries. It's just not going to happen every day. I know that's not good. So sometimes these big umbrellas of I should work out, I should eat better, it's too daunting. Like it could just be one thing, Dawn, like I'm going to drink a gallon of water today, you know, and make that your thing. Maybe say, I'm going to drink a gallon of water while I'm listening to a podcast or reading an article on the computer.
So before we jump back to Dawn, because I want to hear what she has to say, she says Lisa said the question reminds me of Gretchen Rubin's book, Better Than Before.
Good.
Have you read that one?
Absolutely.
I'm so surprised that you've read that book. Not. We do what we're in the habit of doing based on what motivates you. There are different ways to create a new habit. Millie says, it may also just take time. I feel that's like right. I've been learning to be self-aware some years ago, but doing anything about it has taken years.
Yes. Second, the biggest.
Sarah's a big fan of Better Than Before.
And you know, the thing about, you know, Better Than Before is also about remembering that you know, biologically, neurobiologically, you have pathways that are in your brain that have been hardwired that are really quick highways to get a dopamine fix, which is, it's a lot easier to sit in front of a computer and read a really good article that inspires you, and then you get that dopamine fix in your brain, and your brain knows that that's a neural pathway it can go down. So again, it's going to resist putting on shoes, going outside, doing something different. Again, the resistance and the shadow, but you want to be able to enjoy reading an article at your computer rather than feeling guilty about it.
Yeah.
You know, you can divide it up with 15 minutes as a, you know, you're like, you know what, I want to go sit down and read an article. I'm going to, you know, walk up and down the stairs just for 15 minutes or take a walk around the block, and then I'm going to sit down and enjoy it. Similar to when I have my French fries, they're so good. I eat them.
Eat them mindfully.
I sometimes eat Cameron's.
What about my algebra equation though? That was pretty awesome.
I like you, Todd. No. I don't like algebraic equations, but I think when you sent her,
when they see the handout, they're going to be,
they're going to be like, Todd, woo.
All right, Dawn, I just unmuted you. Any feedback?
The reason for wanting to do this was anxiety management. Mm-hmm. Debbie Reber actually had an older podcast. I want to say it was number 89 or something. And this woman blew my socks off. Is that funny? About her explanation of what happens when your body is flooded with the neurochemicals or whatever that are produced from anxiety, and then you're not in a fight or flight actual situation to burn them off, and how they like build up. And it was the first time anybody had ever explained that process to me where it made sense. And I was like, oh, I think I kind of get now why I'm supposed to work out.
Right.
You know, because I don't have that. I don't have an actual fight or flight worthy situation. So, but even knowing that information, why is it still so hard for me? And when you just said, Kathy, about we've created these dopamine pathways or whatever you said to get that quick hit, it's like addiction.
Absolutely. That's what addiction is. Because I'm the exact same way. Sometimes I'm like, I have to hear a podcast that's meaningful right now. I have to read an article that stimulates something in me. Like I get, that is addiction, you know? And again, instead of feeling like, what's wrong with me, I need to change it, it's just understand it. And the more we push against and resist something, the more power we give it. I absolutely, when I wake up, want to grab my phone. Not because I want to work harder, but I want to see something that gives me a dopamine fix. It's not, we used to talk about grabbing our phone like we need to stop working at whatever time. I'm not working, I'm reading articles. I'm, you know, listening to a song, but I'm still grabbing my phone. And, you know, the woman on Debbie Reber's podcast, like, I love that language that she used. The language Todd and I use a lot with the girls and with ourselves is it's not about working out, it's about moving energy. So instead of being like, you know, that's, it's all the same thing, but it's, if you get that download or that, you know, that flood of chemicals that is anxiety or whatever it may be, that is literally an energy in motion, and something you need to move. You don't have to go to Orange Theory, you don't have to go for a run, but you need to move it. And so it could even be walking up and down the stairs. I'm not kidding. Like exactly like that, Bethany, just walk.
And by the way, we were obviously just talking about changing, and we're talking to Dawn about, you know, her getting off her computer and going outside, but use these same ideas for anything that any of us are stuck on. So in other words, this advice says, you know, it's universal.
Absolutely. So. And remember, try not to demonize the joy that you get from the things that set off the dopamine. It's not bad. It just needs to be balanced. Technology isn't bad. It just needs to be recognized when it's gotten too far the other way. Because what we do is we'll just trade it, you know, baby with the bathwater, or we will go, this is all bad, this is when I'm good. You can have a little bit of both.
There's a book called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior by Dan Millman.
Yeah. It's a great book.
And who's like the guru in that book? Is his name Socrates?
Socrates, yeah. And Socrates.
And in the book, it's a really good book. It's been a while since I read it, but you know, he's like training his mind, his body, his soul, his spirit. And then one day Socrates, his mentor, takes him out and gets him drunk one night.
They get loaded, yeah.
And he's like, "What are you doing? We're we're in this, I'm a machine. I'm in this finely tuned place. And now you're getting me drunk. He goes, it's not about the behavior. It's about the habit.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with a beer or vegging out on Facebook or whatever. But when it becomes habitual, that's when you have to kind of make a reframe.
And the reason why it needs to be reframed is when we think something has become habitual, and maybe when we've even noticed it's becoming an addiction, if we go towards shame, then we make it worse. Mm-hmm.
So you give it more energy.
You give it more energy. So, it, you know, we think, oh, I feel so ashamed of this, or this is so bad. Instead, it's, wow, I'm on this. Just you asking the question, Don, you're already aware of it. Mm. You've already, you know, you're already 75% of the way there. And like, you know, Millie said, you know, it just takes time. Like, you, we know something's important, but sometimes it takes time to take the next step. I would do something small and just start drinking a lot of water during the day.
Baby steps.
Yeah, just do something small.
All right, we're moving over to Millie. Hi, Millie.
Hi, Millie.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
You know, I think it was last week's podcast, you guys mentioned about showing the kids how you make up after a disagreement or a fight.
Yes.
Do you guys fight in front of the kids? Because I've wondered when my husband and I should fight or disagree in front of the kids, because we usually do this behind closed doors, or, you know, when they're asleep or just when they're not around. Mm. And I've thought about how if they don't witness positive or a positive version of disagreeing and then making up afterwards, how do they learn, right? And so I know one time, a few weeks ago, I, in front of the kids at the dinner table or something, I think I disagreed about something that my husband brought up. And then later on, I had to explain to them the reason why, because I'm thinking I want them to see us disagree about something and still be okay, right? But I'm wondering, I don't want to all of a sudden start, hey, honey, let's just fight in front of them, you know?
Because then it's inauthentic, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, if it's a situation where it is really major or something that could scare the kids, like if it's a couple that's possibly talking about divorce, you know, you probably don't want to do that in front of the kids. But like, what do you think would be the boundaries of when we, again, fight? You know, because we don't have any major fights. We don't yell. We don't do anything like that. Though I would imagine that might be helpful for the kids to see too, right? Two people literally like yelling at each other and then seeing them, you know what, we're... And then they make up. Do you guys fight in front of the kids? And
great.
I don't know. Do you understand my question?
I do.
Oh, I totally 100%. Understand. And I got plenty of takes. I just muted you. So the first word that came to me was authenticity, Millie. So I wouldn't like fabricate a situation of, you know, now we have to do this or that. And there's no right answer. I think there are some times when you do need to go behind closed doors to have a disagreement with your spouse. And I think that there's other times where it's at, you know, you kind of answered your own question. Is it good for my kids to see us disagreeing respectfully? Absolutely. If everything goes on behind closed doors, they may think that you guys never have a disagreement. That's not right. It's how you disagree. And if you drop below the line and end up screaming, which I know you well enough, Millie, that you probably don't. But when you do, how do you apologize for it? Like, just allow your kids to observe these behaviors. And, you know, if you don't handle a certain situation well, then allow your kids to see you apologize to your spouse or apologize to them or to yourself because you're not good for yourself. So I don't know. That's kind of my
sense. Your question about do Todd and I fight. We kind of struggle with that word fight because no, we don't fight. We disagree. We work together. We live together. We parent together. We disagree a lot. But I can't think of a time that we have ever yelled at each other. And I know, and again, there are some things Todd and I don't say on the show because we're afraid people will roll their eyes and be like, I don't believe you. Like, we really have had to, like, you know, we have to be thoughtful about that because of people's definition of that word fight. They think that everything goes perfectly. Not true. Todd and I are very different people. I disagree with the way he does things sometimes and vice versa. I bring things up to him that are uncomfortable, but it doesn't fall under that, to me, that umbrella of the word fight. But as far as, because when I think of fight, I think of yelling. And that is not, have we fought? Like, do we, like, we... I know we don't, what I'm asking is, am I missing something? Am I being clear?
No, we disagree almost always respectfully, but sometimes, you know, there may be some passive aggressiveness from to you or from me to me. So no, to answer your question, and the weird thing is it doesn't have to be volume too. Like, you can have a really nasty fight
when you're quiet
with whispers too.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then some people are just loud and they're not really even fighting. Totally. So everybody's different.
I have a girlfriend who's like that. I feel like every time I'm in a conversation with her, we're fighting because she's yelling.
But you can quietly tell somebody to F off.
Yeah.
And that's fighting.
So, but on that note, my point was that Todd and I, when we disagree, there have been times that the girls will come in and maybe have a question, or I'm always picturing us in the office because usually that's when I'm like, I don't want to do that. That's not okay with me. That doesn't feel right. And he'll be explaining his side. And sometimes the girls will walk in and want something and I'll say, girls, your dad and I are having kind of a serious discussion. We'll be done in a minute. And then usually after we walk out, obviously a lot of eyes are on us and we're not like pretending like, oh, but then I'll be like, hey, what's for dinner? Blah, blah, blah. Like I can switch gears so they know that, and it's authentic. I'm not thinking to myself, I better demonstrate to them that we're okay. I think the idea doesn't have to be with your spouse. It can be, but coming up or creating something or inauthentically creating something to demonstrate to your kids is not worthwhile because they're going to see right through it. Like children are like, what are they doing? Okay.
Sadie, what about Sean's?
How about the total silent treatment is a million times worse. I agree with that. And I wanted to say something about that, but before I finish, before I do, it's also how you make up with your kids, Millie. Like they can learn the same skill through how you're communicating with them because you may get into more of an argument with them than they're seeing with your spouse. But your ability to come back to them or apologize or to accept their apology, even if it's kind of like a kind of apology, or to not give them the silent treatment or to not treat them poorly later or to not bring something up that happened 2 weeks ago, they're learning the same thing that they would be learning by watching you and your husband. So it doesn't have to be just you and your husband. It can also be watching an argument. Like, you know, for those of you at the conference, the videos we showed, right? You know, again, they're videos and they're TVs. It's a TV show or it's a movie, but you can talk about those things. You can say that person really listened or that person really yelled or they came back together, because I think sometimes, especially when experts are giving examples of you have to do this, you have to do that, only if that makes sense in your home. You aren't missing the boat if you and your husband have a way of conversing behind the scenes where you figure something out. You don't have to bring that out in the open to parent. Like I'm hoping that I'm like decreasing your worry about it because you don't have to change what you're doing.
Well, one quick piece on the silent treatment is, and you know, we can go down a rabbit hole with this one, but, and we've shared this in the podcast, but there's certain behaviors that drive us nuts. And one of the things that Kathy knows that I can't stand is the silent treatment. So that's my Achilles heel. And I don't know, there's some like childhood baggage I have with that, like either my mom or my dad did it to me or something, but I would much rather her talking to me or even yelling at me, which she doesn't do, than a silent treatment. So it's important to communicate to your partner what your Achilles heel is. Like Kathy doesn't want to be talked over, or when she's sharing something important with me, she certainly doesn't want me to be on her phone, or I try to fix her problem even though she wants validation. So it's important that we know what that Achilles heel is in our partner. And some partners are really good at that, but other partners, even though they've been around each other for a long time, still don't know what those things are. So there's certain sacred space you want to stay away from in that regard. So that's the other thought.
And then my last thing, Millie, is there's sometimes I've talked with the girls, like in the car, like they'll bring up like an old story and I'll say something like, you know, Todd took them somewhere that I thought was unsafe or something. And I'll be like, I was so frustrated with your dad that day. Or, you know, like, and I'm through it. So I don't have the same emotion, but that they know that frustration with the ones we love are okay. We may not be having that argument right there, but like, we can be honest about, yeah, sometimes I get frustrated with your dad, or, you know, and they may say, you do? And it's like, yeah, we do. And I think that the key to what John Gottman was saying is that kids need to see you. It's not just about making up after fighting. They need to see their parents be physical with each other. So you don't have to have a fight and then give a hug. They may not even know you had an argument, but in the morning, do you guys give each other a hug? Do you hold hands sometimes? Really what our children want to see is that we have connection.
Sometimes too much connection. If I give her a kiss in the kitchen, Cameron's not a fan.
Cameron doesn't want us to kiss too much.
No.
She'll be like, don't do that.
And guess who doesn't care?
Or Skylar. Skylar tries to get in.
Get in between
She'll
us.
Be like, let me.
I think she wants to be a part of it, whereas Cameron, I think, detests it.
Well, she doesn't detest what we're – she just doesn't want to see it. She loves that we love each
she
other.
She detests seeing she detests. It. How
yeah,
about that?
Yeah, it embarrasses her. She's 14.
But there's nobody else in the house. What is she embarrassed
she's
about?
She's embarrassed. It feels – she's having all these new feelings and emotions and what kissing means, and she doesn't want to think about her parents doing things.
That's just kissing. All right, I'm going to go back to Millie, and then we're going to have Nikki give us an update. Millie, any other thoughts?
Yeah, no, that's all good. Yeah, I would never inauthentically fight, you know, yes, just to yeah. show them the fight. Never. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I just wonder, I'm like, should we kind of, and it will probably be up to me to, like, assess the situation and go, you know what, I think I'm going to say something right now and just
yes.
disagree.
Yes.
You know, and then you know, be okay. Again, go up and hug them, you know, afterwards
yes.
and say, yeah, we're good. You know? So yeah, I just was curious if you guys did because, and I guess one thing that has always stuck in the back of my mind is the director of this preschool that I took all my kids to, she shared a story, how she and her husband went through a rough time where they went to therapy. They almost broke up.
Mm.
And, their adult son, you know, when they were celebrating some significant anniversary, stood up and said in front of everyone, you know, I just want to thank you for working on your relationship because, of course, they benefited from them working on their relationship. So clearly, this was something done that the kids were aware of when they were younger. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I've never asked her how did you show this, you know, to the kids. So I just was curious because these adult kids were aware of their parents working on their marriage when they were young. You know what I mean?
And exactly. And what I would say to that is it's all relative, meaning your children could probably say the exact same thing to you, but the working on your marriage is more subtle. Mm. For some kids, it's a more crisis situation. And so they'll say, wow, I got to see you work through that crisis. And for some kids, it's every day there was something little I saw. If mom, I saw you reading a book, dad, I saw you giving mom a hug, you worked on it differently. And sometimes, you know, like whenever we have a crisis, we can always look back in hindsight and say, look at how much I learned. But if you're not in crisis, if your children are not experiencing crisis every day, they're still learning things and there is no better or worse. So like them seeing you just simply disagree at the dinner table because you really want to, that's like really what you're feeling. That's good for them too. And they don't need the major highs and lows to learn. They're learning no matter what.
So I have three other pieces, and then we're going to go to Nikki. One is, this is kind of an inside, I would not say this on the podcast, but Kathy and I do not fight mean. Like, we have disagreements, but, and I wouldn't say that because I think there'd be so many people about that either you think we're lying.
Well, it's what their definition of a fight means.
Right, but we right. don't yell at each other.
Right.
And some people cannot comprehend that. Like, that's what marriages are for goodness sakes. So the reason we're healthy enough to be able to say that with authenticity is because I work on myself and she works on herself. And the working on the marriage part is like secondary. Is if we're working on ourselves and, you know, whatever, exercising, meditating, reading, whatever it is, that's what puts us in a position to have a healthy relationship. So I would not say that on the podcast, but I'll share it with you guys. But that's why. Work on yourself and everything will get better. And then, you know, when you happen to find yourself fighting with somebody, I was just preaching to the girls about this yesterday because I think JC and Cameron were going at it. Let go of the rope. One, it takes two people to fight, one person to stop it. If you let go of the rope, then you can do it. And then the last thing is that we shared on the podcast last week when we talked about Dr. Ottman, what's his name?
Gottman.
Gottman.
That's who Millie is referring to. That's the guy who said this in the first place.
State the other's opinion to their specifications before you can get into an argument. We shared that on the podcast last week, but it's worth repeating. Before you guys get into a fight or any of us get into a fight, see if you can successfully state the other's opinion and why they're stating it and have them say, okay. So you're basically repeating back to them what they think. And I think it would minimize any disagreements.
And then the last thing that I said this on the show a long time ago, probably on a Zen Talk too, but for those of you who are new, just you know, the word that I dropped about 3 years into my marriage was I dropped the word husband. I don't think of Todd as my husband. I think of Todd as my friend. And how do you treat your friends?
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of permission in this society to treat our spouses, our wives, and our husbands in a certain way, and we expect certain arguments and fights. And we're totally off of Millie's topic right now. I'm just kind of going down a different path. And when I realized that Todd, as my husband, would lead me into conversations with people about how difficult husbands are, how husbands don't listen, how husbands suck for whatever reason, I'm like, I got to change that word. Todd is my friend, just like my best friend from high school. She and I really don't fight. I mean, I speak up when I need to, whatever, but I can't think of a time I've yelled at her.
Do you get frustrated when she's late?
Yes. My friend Manisha's late.
And maybe we can save this for next time because I do want to give Nikki a few minutes. Anita says this can be hard, as we all know, when one person is working on themselves but the other is not.
Absolutely. It's the most common question we get.
You're right.
That is probably the question, right? Especially because we do this podcast together.
And I think we did a podcast right after last year's conference, because after the conference or after any thing that Kathy and I ever do, there's all these women that come up to me and say, how do I get my husband to blank? Yeah. So maybe just search through the archives and maybe you could find a few on that. So that might
or help. Maybe you can put them in the notes.
See if I can find it. So we're going to close out with Nikki to give us an update on what's going on in her world.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for everyone's messages on Facebook. It was greatly appreciated. For those of you who don't know, last Zen Talk, after it, I posted that my husband had just gone into the hospital, and it was all anxiety based, and basically he'd got overwhelmed at work and he had adrenaline rushing through his body, so it sort of sounds like what we talked about today.
Yeah.
And he couldn't stop it. It was just coursing through him and he couldn't think straight, and all he could feel was adrenaline right through his body. And being 47, they were checking for heart attacks and things like that. So we had 3 days going in and out of GP and then accident emergency and then to hospital just to rule out any health issues. And by the fourth day, they ruled all that out, and he was put on anxiety medication. And then he did some, he had 2 more days off work and did neuralistic programming with a friend and counselling, and reached out to work and spoke to the HR people at work and then his bosses, and didn't go back to work till he felt well again. But the amazing thing about this, and I guess it ties in with what we've talked about, is we had those 5 days as a couple. Our kids knew broadly what was going on, but but we're just focused on each other. And then what we could use with that is that both my son and daughter suffer from severe anxiety. My daughter's been diagnosed with chronic anxiety, and my son, he throws up 2 times a day, and it's anxiety based. And so the conversations it was able to open up is really talking about, first of all, Dad was feeling anxiety. This is how it felt through his body. Doctors needed to rule out that it was a medical reason, because that ties in with my son. And they needed to rule out that his throwing up wasn't a medical in hyperdrive. And this is the things that, and Craig could talk about as well, this is the things that I'm doing to help myself. And I'm talking and I'm walking and I'm doing these things. And it just, I think it helped normalize it for the kids that they're not the only ones that feel these feelings, and are not the only ones that are seeking help or using medication at times and all of those things. Mm-hmm. And the other amazing thing that's come out of it is Craig's often sort of had that feeling of just suck it up, kids. You need to get on the bus. You need to go to school. You need to do all of those things. And now that he's felt that feeling through his body, he's going, oh my gosh, my kids are amazing. I can't believe they have these feelings.
Yeah.
I know, it's been amazing. And the way he talks to our kids now about how brave and strong and in awe he is of them, because they do get still on that bus, even though they're scared out of their brains and feeling it right through their bodies. And he's a really, it's just lovely. And that's all come over the last while. So.
Wow,
that's beautiful.
That's wonderful. Jeez. I'm going to mute you real quick. So, and Kathy probably wants to say something. It's I'm just so funny because we talk about like life lessons, and what I try to do sometimes is see the lesson when I'm in it. And there's no way Nikki could have seen this lesson mm-hmm. when her husband was going to the hospital. Mm-hmm. But now that the dust has settled after a few weeks, they're seeing all these learning pieces that come from it. And, you know, I'm not one of those guys that says life, everything happens for a reason, but there's some wonderful things that got pulled out of mm-hmm. this crisis. Mm-hmm. This husband has a degree of empathy he never, ever would have gotten
without feeling it in his
had
body.
This experience. So, anyways, I just think that that's a lovely update. So
it is. And thank you, Nikki, for sharing. And, you know, it kind of brings together everything we're talking about, like, you know, starting with Lauren's question, like everybody's, you know, things happen in life and they're hard and they're difficult and they can feel overwhelming or like there's like a crisis, and it is a crisis. And when there's a crisis, things break and things like fall apart as they should. Something needed to fall apart, you know, but there's always a rebuilding that we can do, and our children can watch us do that. You know, like going back to Millie's question, like we don't need, and Millie didn't say this, I'm just making this up. We don't need to create challenges because they're going to come. And if we've gone through 3 or 4 years or 5 years or 10 years with none, that's fantastic. Like instead of saying, shoot, bad things aren't happening, it's like, this is great because, you know, our kids have learned that life can be really stable too. But then when there is a crisis, kids learn they can be resilient. Adults learn they can be resilient. It is hard, but it's not. People always, grief always drives us toward, why is this happening? This shouldn't be happening. It should be happening. It's life. Life is not supposed to be like this. There is death. There is, you know, anxiety. There is depression. There is shadow. That, and it's that we can get through it, not avoid it. And then when we have a lot, Todd and I sometimes have a couple months where things are just really smooth, and just enjoy your time in the sun. It's a longer, you know, and you don't have to be afraid that it's going to go away, but you just have gratitude for those moments. And you're all working really hard, and you're supporting each other and in your own families and on this team. And we just really appreciate you, because I learned so much from all of you. So thank you.
No doubt. So I don't know when the next Zentalk is going to be. You'll get an email from me. One thing I wanted to mention is if you are considering coming to the conference next year, the early bird that we extended at the conference will go on until I think Monday mm-hmm. of next week. So, and Team Zen members get 10% off of the early bird number. So early bird is $225. Team Zen members get it for $202.50. So if you are thinking about doing it, get your early. So you have to sign into your account on the Zen Parenting Radio, the Team Zen member page, and then go to the store. So you just need to be logged in, and then you get the extra 10% off. So go ahead and do that if you guys are interested in next year's thing. And yeah, so that's the best price that you're going to get all year. So if you're going to do it now. February 28th and 29th.
Leap year.
Leap year
weekend.
If I could ask Aaron and Sean to stay on real quick, just so we can talk about some other business. But to the rest of you, I'm going to unmute you all, and we're going to do a quick bye to everybody. Unmute all. Okay, you guys are all on. Say bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Keep trucking, for goodness sakes. Adios.
Bye, Brittany.
Is that Brittany?
Oh, is it Bethany?
I don't know.
Bethany.
Bethany. Bye, Bethany. Yeah. Hi, Bethany. And then there's a little baby there. What's her name? Sienna?
I don't know.
Five children. We love children.
Children of the corn. No.
That's scary.
No, that's not it, sweetie.
And then you don't have to record it.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to stop recording. Pause recording. Just